Chapter 59. The George Isles, Far the Tote Blue Snowshoe Club, Montreal. Detroit, February 12, 1885. Midnight, P.S.S. My dear Isles, I got your other telegram a while ago, and answered it, explaining that I get only a couple of hours in the middle of the day for social life. I know it doesn't seem rational that a man should have to lie abed all day in order to be rested and equipped for talking an hour at night, and yet in my case and cables it is so. Unless I get a great deal of rest, a ghastly dullness settles down upon me on the platform and turns my performance into work and hard work, whereas it ought always to be pastime, recreation, solid enjoyment. Usually it is just this latter, but that is because I take my rest faithfully, and prepare myself to do my duty by my audience. I am the obliged and appreciative servant of my brethren of the Snowshoe Club, and nothing in the world would delight me more than to come to their house without naming time, or terms on my own part, but you see how it is. My cast-iron duty is to my audience, it leaves me no liberty and no option. With kindest regards to the club, and to you, I am sincerely yours S50. Clemens. In the next letter we reach the end of the Clemens cable venture, and get a characteristic summing up of Mark Twain's general attitude toward the companion of his travels. It must be read only in the clear realization of Mark Twain's attitude toward orthodoxy, and his habit of humor. Cable was as rigidly orthodox as Mark Twain was revolutionary. The two were never anything but the best of friends. To W. D. Howells, in Boston. Philada. February 27, 85. My dear Howells, tonight in Baltimore, tomorrow afternoon and night in Washington, and my 4 months platform campaign is ended at last. It has been a curious experience. It has taught me that Cable's gifts of mind are greater and higher than I had suspected. But that UD is pointing toward his religion. You will never, never know, never divine, guess, imagine, how loathsome a thing the Christian religion can be made until you come to know and study Cable daily and hourly. Mind you, I like him. He is pleasant company. I rage and swear at him sometimes, but we do not quarrel. We get along mighty happily together, but in him and his person I have learned to hate all religions. He has taught me to abhor and detest the Sabbath day and hunt up new and troublesome ways to dishonor it. Nat Goodwin was on the train yesterday. He plays in Washington all the coming week. He is very anxious to get our Sellers play and play it under changed names. I said the only thing I could do would be to write to you. Well, I've done it. Is ever Mark. Clemens and Webster were often at the house of General Grant during these early days of 1885, and it must have been Webster who was present with Clemens on the great occasion described in the following telegram. It was on the last day and hour of President Arthur's administration that the bill was passed which placed Ulysses S. Grant as full general with full pay on the retired list, and it is said that the congressional clock was set back in order that this enactment might become a law before the administration changed. General Grant had by this time developed cancer and was already in feeble health. Telegram to Mrs. Clemens, in Hartford. New York, March 4, 1885. To Mrs. S. 50. Clemens, we were at General Grant's at noon and a telegram arrived that the last act of the expiring Congress late this morning retired him with full general's rank and accompanying emoluments. The effect upon him was like raising the dead. We were present when the telegram was put in his hand. S. 50. Clemens. Something has been mentioned before of Mark Twain's investments, and the generally unprofitable habit of them. He had a trusting nature, and was usually willing to invest money on any plausible recommendation. He was one of thousands such, and being a person of distinction he now and then received letters of inquiry, complaint, or condolence. A minister wrote him that he had bought some stocks recommended by a Hartford banker and advertised in a religious paper. He added, after I made that purchase they wrote me that you had just bought 800 shares and that you were a shrewd man. The writer closed by asking for further information. He received it as follows. To the Rev. J. in Baltimore, Washington, MCH. 285. My dear sir, I take my earliest opportunity to answer your favor of February. B. was premature in calling me a rude man. I wasn't one at that time, but am one now. That is, I am at least too shrewd to ever again invest in anything put on the market by B. I know nothing whatever about the banknote company, and never did know anything about it. B. sold me about $4,000 or $5,000 worth of the stock at $110, and I own it yet. He sold me $10,000 worth of another rose-tinted stock about the same time. I have got that yet, also. I judge that a peculiarity of B.'s stocks is that they are of the staying kind. I think you should have asked somebody else whether I was a shrewd man or not for two reasons. The stock was advertised in a religious paper, a circumstance which was very suspicious. And the compliment came to you from a man who was interested to make a purchaser of you. I am afraid you deserve your loss. A financial scheme advertised in any religious paper is a thing which any living person ought to know enough to avoid. And when the factor is added, that M runs that religious paper, a dead person ought to know enough to avoid it. Very truly yours, S50. Clemens. The story of Huck Finn was having a wide success. Webster handled it skillfully, and the sales were large. In almost every quarter its welcome was enthusiastic. Here and there, however, could be found an exception. Huck's morals were not always approved of by library reading committees. The first instance of this kind was reported from Concord, and would seem not to have depressed the author-publisher. To Chaz. 50. Webster, in New York. MCH 1885. Dear Charlie, the committee of the Public Library of Concord, Mass., have given us a rattling tip-top puff which will go into every paper in the country. They have expelled Huck from their library as rash and suitable only for the slums. That will sell 25,000 copies for us sure. S50. See, perhaps the Concord Free Trade Club had some idea of making amends to Mark Twain for the slight put upon his book by their librarians, for immediately after the Huck Finn incident they notified him of his election to honorary membership. Those were the days of Uther's readings, and Clemens and Howells not infrequently assisted at these functions, usually given as benefits of one kind or another. From the next letter, written following an entertainment given for the Longfellow Memorial, we gather that Mark Twain's opinion of Howells' reading was steadily improving. To W. D. Howells, in Boston. Hartford, May 5, 85. My dear Howells, who taught you to read? Observation and thought, I guess. And practice at the Tavern Club? Yes, and that was the best teaching of all. Well, you sent even your daintiest and most delicate and fleeting points home to that audience, absolute proof of good reading. But you couldn't read worth a damn a few years ago. I do not say this to flatter. It is true I looked around for you when I was leaving, but you had already gone. Alas, Osgood has failed at last. It was easy to see that he was on the very verge of it a year ago, and it was also easy to see that he was still on the verge of it a month or two ago, but I continued to hope but not expect that he would pull through. The Library of Humor is at his dwelling house, and he will hand it to you whenever you want it. To save it from any possibility of getting mixed up in the failure, perhaps you had better send down and get it. I told him, the other day, that an order of any kind from you would be a sufficient warrant for its delivery to you. In 2 days General Grant has dictated 50 pages of Foolscap, and thus the Wilderness and Appomattox stand for all time in his own words. This makes the second volume of his book as valuable as the first. He looks mighty well, these latter days. Ears ever, Mark. am exceedingly glad, wrote Owls, that you approve of my reading, for it gives me some hope that I may do something on the platform next winter. But I would never read within 100 miles of you, if I could help it. You simply straddled down to the footlights, and took that house up in the hollow of your hand and tickled it. To W.D. Owls, in Boston. Elmira, July 21, 1885. My dear Owls, you are really my only author. I am restricted to you. I wouldn't give a damn for the rest. I bored through Middlemarch during the past week, with its labored and tedious analyses of feelings and motives, its paltry and tiresome people, its unexciting and uninteresting story, and its frequent blinding flashes of single-sentence poetry, philosophy, wit, and whatnot, and nearly died from the overwork. I wouldn't read another of those books for a farm. I did try to read one other Daniel Deronda. I dragged through three. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.